Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
And now, from beyond our dimension, this is the Jeff Mara Podcast. Here's Jeff.
My guest is Suzanne J. Wilson, also known as the Carefree Medium. She's an Arizona-based intuition educator, author, and evidential medium, and she's had a near-death experience, which was a course correction for her in her life. Suzanne, thank you for joining me today and welcome.
Oh my gosh, Jeff, thank you for having me. Very excited to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you. And if you don't mind, let's start on the day that you died and go from there.
Oh, jumping right in. On the day that I died, here was the state of my life. I had a very busy job as a corporate human resources executive. I was in a weekend PhD program, and I was secretly going to psychic development classes and sitting in a mediumship development circle. And I say secretly because all I really wanted to do in life was make money, spend money, and fit in. But I had these abilities from childhood that I also really needed to understand. I had no intention whatsoever at that time of my NDE to make my life's calling any kind of spiritual work. No intention of doing readings for people other than to develop my gifts. No intention of being a spiritual teacher. And then the day came that my heart stopped and I left my body, and it changed my mind. Literally, about what matters most in life and afterlife. I was at, my voice starts to shake when I just even think about this. I was at the doctor's office. I was having allergy tests. Now, if you're going to code, a doctor's office is a pretty darn good place to do it because they will not let you die. If there's any way to bring you back, you will be brought back. Obviously, I'm here. So I was there for my second round of getting allergy tests. And this time they had increased the amount of the allergens that they were punching into my arms and waiting for the skin reactions. I had no idea that I could have anaphylactic shock in this type of process. And later I would learn that it's very, very rare, but it happened to me. I felt very warm and kind of cold and clammy, sweaty at the same time. And I told the technician who was injecting me, I don't feel well, it's hot in here. And she made a joke like, oh, maybe you're having a hot flash. And I tried to crack a smile and be nice and play along, but I was getting nauseated too. And then she said, let me adjust the air conditioning. And then meanwhile, I said, no, I really don't feel well. And I felt my throat start to close up and my heart slowing down. And she ran out of the room and left me. She was going to get help. I started honking through my throat like a goose, and it was completely out of my control. I could not catch my breath. I could just hear this honking sound. The technician came back with another technician and two doctors. There was a technician on my left side and one on my right. One of the doctors said, hold her up. And they started opening cabinets. The doctor was getting something to inject me. And as that happened, everything slowed down. I mean, the people in the room slowed down. They looked flat and their eyes were black, like they were dead. They looked like cardboard cutouts to me. As I felt my heart slow down, I heard this popping sound. And I remember thinking, that's like a champagne cork. And I popped straight out of my body backwards. And I was standing a few inches off the ground behind my body, looking at the back of my head. And now the technicians and the doctors in the room were moving in total slow motion. They looked even more dead than before, more fake. I was in the real world. And I felt good. I was no longer having that honking goose sound. And I realized that my throat had felt like it was on fire and the fire was gone. I remember looking at the back of my head and having this very strange thought, oh, I need to fix that part of my hair. And then realizing I'm looking at the back of my head. Where am I? There was music and colors, and I can't describe the music adequately. I've had tears of frustration in the past trying to describe the music. In fact, one time I met with a reporter who was strictly interviewing NDEers about the music that they heard and trying to create a symphony to match it. I don't know that that's possible. I'm musical. I read music. I play piano and other instruments. I can tell you this was all major keys going upwards in waves and crescendos, but it wasn't musical instruments. It was like voices making instruments. And I had that thought that maybe these are angels. I don't know. But I wanted to go to where that music was. I noticed swirling colors all around and they were beautiful. And as I said, I had always seen things that others couldn't see, but I'd never seen colors like this before. It's just amazing, laser-like and then soft and then swirling and moving as though they were alive. And just as I thinking I want to go to the music, I felt arms around me from behind me. And although I couldn't see him, I knew that these were the arms of my granddad who had passed when I was in high school. And he was my father figure, my mentor, the one that told me that the gifts I was born with were a gift from God. And it helped me so much in my life. And I think about him every day to this day. Although I couldn't see him, I felt his arms. I knew it was him. And I thought, great, he's going to take me to where the music is coming from. And I started to notice, I better pay attention to the slow motion thing going on in front of me with the doctors. The technicians on either one of my arms were still holding me up. Well, my body looked limp and my head was hanging down. And I had zero interest in that body, zero. I looked at the doctor that had opened the cabinet, moving in slow motion. He was preparing an injection. So I guess I just wanted to keep going. It felt more real where I was going than where I came from. And I never felt so good and so free and so loved. And I remember saying, oh, Granddad, it's been so long. Let's go. And I never really heard words come from him, just his love that I received. And just as I think I'm going to get to go to this place and follow the colors and make music too, I see that they're putting an injection in my arm. And I guess you could call it being vacuum sucked back into the body, which I did not appreciate at the time because it hurt like hell. It was kind of like all of my matter, all of my mass of my body was being pushed through the head of a needle that was lit on fire. And I did get back into the body. And the paramedics rushed into the door and they had a defibrillator. And the doctor said, no, I think she's breathing. And I was, but I couldn't speak. And I just wanted to scream, let me go. But there's not going to be any words coming out when your throat is on fire and your chest feels like it's got an elephant sitting on it. And I was in shock because I wanted to be with my granddad. I wanted him. I'm in the ambulance and my granddad is floating above me, looking down at me. And I'm like, wow, usually I have to work so hard to tune into him and make a connection. I have to go into meditation. He doesn't always show up. And here he is. And I'm like, gosh, he actually hasn't left me. It's almost like he still has his arms around me. I can see him. The paramedic inside the ambulance had my purse and asked if he could look at my wallet. And then he said to me, recently we had somebody who had a bee sting and had anaphylaxis and she didn't make it. You're really, really lucky. Maybe you should buy a lottery ticket. And I remember thinking, I just did. I had an experience I can't even tell you about. I've won the lottery. And so that opened up some kind of door where I did not ever again. This is 2007. This happens. I never again had to work to tune in to my gifts. In fact, I had to go back to my secret classes and ask for emergency assistance to help me learn how to tune them out. Because once I was on in this way, I could not live my life. The spirit people were everywhere. The interdimensional beings of all sizes and shapes and colors were everywhere. I even had a spirit person knock on my bathroom door when I was in the toilet. I mean, there were some really hard times that followed this experience, and it kind of led me down the wrong path for a while. I kind of led myself down the wrong path for a while post NDE before I got on the right one. So that's basically what happened to me the day that I died.
Thank you for sharing your experience with us, Suzanne. When you were first outside of your body and you saw the back of your head and you were saying, you know, I should change my hair or something, at that point, did it click with you that, oh, I'm dead? Or at any point, did that
realization come? Death was, there was an instant understanding that there is no death. And so when I say the day that I died, it's just to have a common vocabulary with people. This was not death. This was continuation of my consciousness. And it was going to be the place where I was truly from. That I felt pretty quickly.
Did you ever go back to the doctor's office and tell them, hey, I saw everything that was happening from from the outside?
Yes, I
did. How did they respond?
I think they were kind of scared of me because they were kind of like whale-eyed when I went back in, like, you know, we're not going to do any more allergy tests with you. And I said, yeah, I'm just here for my follow-up. you know, the eyes were bugging out. And they said, well, we've checked and, you know, this is so, so very rare. And I said, yeah. And I saw what you were doing and I saw the cabinet and what were the two things that went into the shot or, you know, and they just kind of acted like they didn't know what to make of me. I think they were worried about a lawsuit or something, which is the farthest thing from my mind because it just happened. Nothing was done wrong. But they were materialist scientists through and through. They were very concerned about me.
Do you think that if one of the doctors or technicians would have turned around and said, hey, Suzanne, if you're here, don't leave. We're gonna bring you back. If they had said that, do you think you would have heard it?
I don't think so. It's very hard to say, but it would have been probably so slowly said from my perspective of them moving in super slow motion and them looking just lifeless and empty. I was focused on the music and I don't think I would have cared what anybody said.
When you were in the ambulance and you saw your grandfather, what age did he appear to be?
About in his 40s. And he dropped dead very, very suddenly of congestive heart failure at 56. And in fact, I had precognitive dreams that something was going to happen to him. He did not have any kind of known heart disease, not that any of the family knew about. And so I had taken it really hard that he had left the earth so very early.
So he was younger than when he transitioned.
Oh, yeah.
Would you say that he appeared possibly at his prime or his best?
I think he appeared at the time where he was at his final church. That would have been, he was a Presbyterian preacher. And he had built many churches and built congregations and been really a leader to so many people. And to me, when I had faked sick as a child, I didn't want to go to school because I saw colors and lights around people and I got bullied for talking about it. He was the guy who said, hey, I see them too. It's a gift from God. We can't talk too much about this, but it's a gift from God. And one day you'll know how to use it. His appearance was at the time of his ultimate gifts back to this physical world. They were rocking and rolling then.
Do you think you had some other NDE as a child, or were you just born with these gifts?
Oh, that is a very interesting question. I did have anaphylaxis when I was about 8 or 9 years old. I had a penicillin allergic reaction and ended up in the hospital. And we didn't know what it was called. It was just in my record that I was allergic to penicillin. But I can remember after I got out of the hospital from that reaction, feeling what I called ghosts. I said Casper the Friendly Ghost was around me because I wasn't really scared of them. So that probably was a near-death experience. I just don't really remember what happened.
After your NDE, you started seeing multidimensional beings all the time.
Yeah.
And actually, you didn't say seeing. They were affecting you. So were you seeing them, hearing them, or both?
Seeing, hearing, feeling, simply knowing the presences were there. But the seeing them objectively, objective clairvoyance is seeing as though they're objects physically in the room, as opposed to the subjective clairvoyance, which is in the mind's eye. It is extraordinarily distracting to see these things objectively.
Wow.
Because there's a point where you can't tell the difference. And I'm an adult in 2007, and I have responsibilities. And I was very distracted. At first, I really just wanted to hug and love everybody, which is not the corporate way to be. And then I got very depressed because I felt like I was losing my mind and had to go back to the teachers from the things I was seeing and hearing, and felt like I couldn't control it. And so my solution for a while was to drink heavily, because if I could just make it through the day and get home from work and open a bottle of wine, by the third glass, I could shut it all off. And that was not a healthy coping mechanism, but it worked for a while.
Interesting that alcohol turned it off. Do you think it was due to lowering your frequency or vibration or something?
I believe it was just numbing me out. I think that I could have had confidence with more experience to know that I'm in charge of the energies around me, and that I needed to get balanced and centered and grounded. And I didn't need the alcohol to do it. In fact, some people think they should use alcohol and drugs to open up to spirit. So is it lowering our frequency? Maybe. But if there are people that think that getting high or getting wasted opens them up to spirit, I caution folks about that, because what it's really doing is removing inhibitions and making you maybe a little bit reckless. So any way you look at this, alcohol is not a good permanent solution to opening up or closing down, but it worked for me when I needed it. I was well on my way to becoming an alcoholic, though. So something had to change.
So how did you become able to turn it off? Like, what do you do?
Those same teachers and workshops that I was going to open up, tune in, develop my evidence, get good at this, again, very secretly, because I had an important job and that was more important to me. I went back and said, help, I'm screwed. I can't live like this. And I don't feel like I belong in my job anymore. I think there's something else for me. I need help. And one of my teachers, a guy named Alan Arcieri, who's now passed into spirit, and at the time he said to me, did you ever turn to one of them, acknowledge them, and say hello, maybe ask them what they want? I'm like, I can do that. So I did. And most of the time it was just the soul wanted to get the acknowledgement. The being wanted to get the acknowledgement. Want to say, hey, I see you and you see me. And it got a lot easier. And my mediumship abilities and my intuitive abilities grew in exponential leaps and bounds when I decided to turn the tables. You know, be an interviewer. I couldn't do it all the time because I was holding a job, and I did become a PhD dropout. Remember, I said I was working full time and doing this PhD program on the weekends, but I learned how to do solid research, how to use data, inform consent, and all those sorts of things, which has been really helpful as a metaphysical and paranormal researcher now. So it's like, I'm using all the things that I've learned. I have a diverse life experience, but I really needed to just focus on the gifts that I was given, that my granddad told me one day I'd figure out what to do with them. It took me a couple of years to get out of the corporate world. I had had an academic job before the corporate world, before the money lured me away. I was a director at a Center for Leadership for a university. And so I'd had all of this life experience that helps me communicate with the living people in a vocabulary that relates to their areas of life, their concerns. And I had these abilities with spirit that I had been ashamed of. And now I wasn't ashamed of those abilities anymore. I was mastering them. and I put away the booze. I can go 6 months, 8 months without a glass of wine now, even though I'm a certified specialist of wine. I actually studied wine, but I don't need it. I just will like it from time to time. So that worked out. What I really hope people take from hearing this experience isn't quit your job and go do XYZ. It's more identify your gift and leverage it to make the world better for yourself and for those you love and for those you don't know, because we're all connected. We're all one. I could have stayed in that corporate world, but it takes all of my life and all of my energy to work with the spirit. In my goal, my gift is teaching. It really is. Even though some years I do individual readings for people, both psychic and mediumship, and I've done platform mediumship demonstrations. My biggest group has been 800 people at a conference, and that's a wonderful, thrilling feeling to be of service in that way. But my real gift is teaching. It's helping people gain the trust and confidence in the intuitive gifts that they have, because everybody has them. And I think it doesn't have to be a near-death experience for you to have a wake-up call to what your gifts are. The wake-up call can just be literally one day having an epiphany of, wow, I better do something with my art. I've got to express this to the world, or I'm a good listener, or I'm great at connecting people and creating synergy to get great things done in the world. Whatever it is, writer, you know, you don't have to completely change your life. I did. I had to completely change my life because this kind of gift that I have, it will eat you alive, seeing and feeling the things that I see and feel, unless I fully embrace it, and I embrace it every day. That doesn't mean I work every single day, but there's not a day that passes that I'm not talking to guides, both human and non-human intelligent beings. So please don't think, oh, how nice for that lady. She could quit her job. I went from having a lot of money to not having any for pretty much for a while. But look for what is your inspiration is what I want to say to people. And look for your opportunities here on Earth. And what I'm seeing now with my students, my own community, is we're getting way more contacts from non-human intelligent beings, the interdimensional allies, I call them. And a lot of my colleagues in mediumship especially, they don't want to go anywhere near extraterrestrial or ultra-terrestrial. The words, they stay away. They'll say things like celestial beings because they think it's too off-putting to people. I've been for years now talking about ETs and ultras and our interdimensional allies, because I was doing connections with people and teaching them how to meet a spirit guide. And over the last few years, I've got like 114 studies, individual studies, and the numbers of guides that are non-human is going up. It's gone up every single year. They're out here in full force trying to help us be the best of humanity that we can possibly be. So there's a lot to be studied. There's a lot to be taught. And I feel like, you know, we all need to be in this together.
So when you are seeing these beings right after your NDE, are they in our realm, or what realm would they be in?
They can phase in and out pretty much anywhere, as far as I can tell. So when you say our realm, if you're talking about the earth plane frequency, yes, they can phase in and out, like ships and transportation modes that are as traditional as we know them are unnecessary. And typically it seems like when ships and vehicles are used, that they're for physical data collection and transportation of things that are being taken from the Earth plane, perhaps. But many of the beings, like, for example, the Arcturians, and I do have an Arcturian guide that I didn't tell anyone about, but other sensitives identified the guide to me to confirm his identity. They used to be in physical form, but now light, total light form. And so, you know, they can go to every frequency. I'm not sure that all interdimensional beings can travel to every dimension. It'll be something really interesting to find out once we get on the other side, won't it?
Well, when you see these beings around you, what are they doing?
If they're human souls, typically I will see them because they're following and hanging out with someone here in the physical that they love. You know, the movie theater is a great place to see the loved ones hanging out and, you know, sitting there as you're eating popcorn and grabbing a seat. It's kind of fun to see who shows up. It's like the whole family is there, physical and non-physical. But that's just one just funny little example. But the spirit people will come to me because their person is my sitter, meaning my client, or they'll come to me because I'm teaching a class and their person's in my class. They typically don't just come to me. I'm not a ghost whisperer per se, meaning I don't attract a bunch of souls just wanting to drop in. They're there. They're there all the time, but they really don't bother me unless we've got business to do. Now, the interdimensional beings know that I can see them also, and they can be very chatty, or they can be a little brusque. They may want information, or I may be anomalous to them because I do see them, or, you know, they've had other opportunities to have human physical souls see them, and it is scared the heck out of the person, and I'm not afraid, so they want to question me. I've had them drop in and give me advice, and I've had them come in as spirit guides in my Ask the Spirit Guide sessions. So there seems to be as much diversity in the non-human intelligent beings as we would have here on Earth in humanity.
For non-NDEers like me, how do we contact these beings?
One of the best ways is to get yourself into a state of gratitude and intend to connect with beings that are deep in prayer or meditation at this time, at a specific point in time, the now, this very moment, and send a thought to them of love and support and show them where you are. And that may sound familiar to those who have followed Dr. Stephen Greer and his Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind protocol, which I have a CE5 group here in Arizona that's had interesting results. But even without following a specific protocol, if your heart is in that place of making a connection, they will ultimately connect with you. It can just take some time. And the way that these beings will connect is they may visit you in a dream. They may make a light appear in the night sky, and it is unmistakably them, because you're going to have this feeling of being completely immersed in pure love, as though you've been visited by an angel. And it won't look like a shooting star. It will have odd behavior. It can shoot through the sky, back and forth, up and down, in a way that is not a shooting star. They can come to you in meditation and give you information that's evidential to show that it's them. The thing is, this is not a transactional relationship. If you're looking for fun and games and you want to connect with someone who wants to be a guide and they're a non-human intelligent being, they won't waste their time on you. They might do something to give themselves some fun and give you a thrill and a one-off, but that's very rare. They typically want to see a consistent, demonstrated effort to connect in consciousness and your consistent gratitude and open heart in order to start making those types of connections with you. Otherwise, why waste their time and energy?
I'm glad you brought up Stephen Greer's work, because I've had guests who've come on the program and we look at their video doing something similar, and it looks like lights or ships. So I wanted to ask, are they putting a light out there, or are those actual crafts?
I believe it can be one or the other. It can be both, because they do sometimes still use vehicles. But one of the lights that I've seen, my spiritual team or team in spirit has told me, no, it's like they're shining a light. They're literally shining light. They're actually sitting right beside you out there in your lawn chair out in the middle of an Arizona field. And they're with you, but they're shining that light to show you.
That makes more sense to me, because I always thought that how does a being in a craft, you know, out in space, able to pick up our thoughts?
Well, they're picking up our thoughts because they're right here. You know, we're sharing that fourth dimension. We're sharing space-time for however long it is. And they're tuning to our hearts. We think it's our brains. We think it's our thoughts, but it's our hearts. It's that electrical field of love and compassion and the untapped part of us, the one that can be unconditionally loving towards ourselves and others at all times, that the non-human intelligent beings can easily sense. And they can sense how much of our potential we have engaged and how much is yet to come. They can even see a little bit further in our future to see where we're going with our lives, where our decisions are leading us, and whether that makes us interesting to them or not. It's they're as individual seemingly as we are.
Can you use their communication to have an advantage in this realm?
You mean their advice?
I guess.
Well, no one is going to save us but us. I will say that. And as much as I've tried, and even in the past, begged, can't you give us world peace? Can't you just get us on this one right path? It ain't going to happen. Ain't going to happen, because it is up to humanity to take care of humanity and our mother, father, earth. Having said that, there are many cultures in our interdimensional allies that want to see Earth taken care of first and foremost, and then running a close second to that, humanity. But they seem to be much more interested in our physical Earth being preserved, and then humanity in that order. Because let's face it, if the Earth is here, there will always be some kind of life that is forming. And maybe we will have a reset. Maybe we've had a reset before in humanity and our development. I've just come back less than a week ago from Egypt, where I've spent a couple of weeks, actually 16 days in Egypt, and very fully immersed in the ancient cultures and the ancient ways and the through line of realizing our souls are eternal, that we're intuitive beings, and the through line of interdimensional non-human intelligence being involved with humanity. And my impression is that it was more side by side than slave and master. And Perhaps we've had a reset in the past. Perhaps we were more incredibly advanced culturally and technologically and through the heart thousands of years ago and had a reset, and we're starting over and we're seeing the problems that come with that now. Maybe we'll have a reset again. My point is that it's us. It's humanity that's responsible for everything that goes on. And in a universal consciousness level, when we break that down, being human is an iterative process. We're learning as we go. But if we have a reset, we start all over. Will other civilizations from other dimensions come and support us and help us if that happens again? I don't want us to have another reset in humanity. I want us to take care of the earth and each other now. And I know you want that, and the listeners want that as well. So at an individual level, what we can do is call upon our own individual relationships that we can have with those who want to guide and assist from the unseen realms, and work at an individual level to be helpful, hopeful, and healing. And I think that's asking for input and advice before we take action in our lives, especially those that affect others.
Do you think that they would prevent a global nuclear war?
Maybe, maybe not.
Who are the multidimensional beings or ETs that you're currently channeling?
Well, Bruce Aaron is the name that we've agreed upon for the Arcturian guide that others have seen with me and that I've felt with me also.
Sorry to interrupt you, but it's interesting that you said that the name we agreed upon.
Yeah, well, for years, when I was teaching about spirit guides, I once had a woman wait 14 months to have an individual session with me. And when she had it, there were no spirit loved ones coming in. And she just goes, oh, no, yeah, nobody's dead in my family. We're all good. And I said, well, why are you having a session? Is it about guides? And she goes, I only want one thing. I want to know my spirit guide's name. And I told her, you can agree upon a name. Because if you think about it, how does a soul become a guide? Experience. That could be many, many incarnations in many places, many names. And in the frequency that a guide is in, names are not needed. They're handy, though, instead of saying, hey, you. So I taught my students, instead of asking a guide in a meditative state or an automatic writing state, or, you know, asking for a dream to tell me your name, ask instead, what name shall I call you? And sometimes when you ask that question, it may come one letter at a time. You may need to buy a vowel, or the name can pop into your head and you can just say, I'm getting this name. Does that work for you? And they'll let you feel in the body. And typically they'll agree with the name that you come up with. So that's why I said that's the name we've agreed upon. I can't imagine that this large, beautiful blue being with this helmet and thick hair, white hair, and what looks like a scabbard and sword at his side, is needing a name as he goes from dimension to dimension. I think his soul is his fingerprint. And I say his even with a question mark, because it's gender is really not important here. There is a group that has been working with me from childhood that I call the Unity, and they're part non-human intelligent beings and former humans, people who are in spirit. They were the white light that would come on Saturday morning to my granddad and help him write his sermon. I was a little girl. I'd be with my coloring books on the floor. We'd be in my granddad's study. He'd sit with a pad of yellow paper and a pen And even to this day, I use these pads of the legal pads for automatic writing and tuning in. When the white light blasted through the study, he'd scribble out his sermon. And when the white light left, he was done. And I thought, as a child, that's how preachers got their sermons. A white light came. And I would see all these lights in the church and all that. Well, as an adult, that white light started coming to me, eventually started speaking. And I said, may I call you the Unity? And I got, yes, we're a unity of souls. So there are others that drop in from time to time. Well, one thing interesting, Edgar Casey, the sleeping prophet, said that when Jesus of Nazareth left his physical body, that he passed through the gateway of Arcturus. And Arcturus is known in my realm, my colleagues, as a very high frequency of those who have a deep and abiding fondness for humanity, almost as though we are their children who are away at camp, falling down and skinning our knees and complaining all the while they're looking after us and doing what they can to help us and paying our tuition for camp. So I am open to new experiences. I've had three Palladians come and drop in and help me when my beloved dog, who very recently passed, was ill. They helped me give comfort to him. They gave recommendations on his insulin that helped him for a while. I checked it with the doctor. The doctor said, yeah, that's a good idea. I have so many experiences, so many journals and so many notes. And what's funny, Jeff, is that when I was a child, I was always scared of the science fiction shows. I like Dracula and Frankenstein and the monster stuff. I would go to the movies with my granddad, but I was scared of aliens. And now it's like, I don't know why I was so afraid, because in this way that I'm operating now, all they bring is what they want to bring. Every single person listening to this is just reassurance. We know you're doing the best that you can. If you ask us individually for help, we'll help you. But we basically observe the prime directive from Star Trek. Remember that?
Yeah.
Right? Which is, do not interfere with the course of history. So when you asked me a while ago, I wasn't trying to be glib when I gave you just maybe or maybe not, will they prevent a nuclear war? We know that they've disarmed nuclear warheads before, just to register their discontent with the fact that we even have them. But that's not going so far as to stop us from self-destruction. But I have tremendous faith in the new generation of humanity, those that have been born in the last 21 years or so, that are coming in here pre-wired, like they've already had the NDE, they've already had the wake-up call, they already accept that life is eternal, many of them, if not most of them, and they want to know right away, how do I just leverage life and get the most out of it, and how can I help humanity and the earth? I believe that they're the ones that will bail us out of this situation that we've gotten ourselves into. And I think that the role for everybody now is to work on yourself. Work on yourself, work on your own self-love, work on checking on your neighbor, work on being helpful, hopeful, and healing, and learn, for heaven's sake, please learn how to say hello and thank your guides. Thank your angels. Ask them each morning when you first see your toothbrush, first thing in the morning, give gratitude. I'm here another day. Let me be an instrument of peace and guides and angels, please help me today, every single day. Yeah, you know, reapply every morning when there's a new day, you know, rinse and repeat. I'm grateful to be here. Let me be an instrument of peace. And ask for the help, because it's like I said, we get a whole lot more help individually than them just coming in and stopping a war.
So everybody has at least one guide?
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes. Look, I've got over 50 years of experience of seeing who's around people. There's never just one. Never.
Do you think guides ever get bored being around us?
Heck yes. I mean, wouldn't you? This again? Or they get all jazzed up. We've got a plan. He's made this decision. All systems go. You know what to do. You know what to do. Wait, stand down. He's changed his mind again. It's all off. I mean, that would piss me off sometimes, right? I mean, let's be real about this. But the thing is, you know, because most of the guides have been they're people. They've been people. You know, yes, there are guides that haven't been human beings before, but people are people. No matter how enlightened we are, we're still going to have fun. We're still going to have a sense of humor. We're still going to be frustrated. And frankly, if you're not getting it and you're not ignoring them and they're not the guide that's really assigned to you, they're a subject matter expert that's come in to help with a specific thing that you're going through. You're not paying attention, they're in demand, they'll go somewhere else. So they don't have to stay bored.
Do you think our guides or the multidimensional beings have some general message for the earth?
Oh yeah, they do. They oftentimes when I've spoken, I've had the unity blend with me. I've also studied trance. So I can go into a light trance, but one thing that they tell us is that we're so beautiful to them in terms of they've used this word before, reckless, our beautiful, reckless human friends. And that sometimes they even, and this is, I use this word loosely, they envy our freedoms to create. And they envy our adventures and our free will. And they want us to use it wisely. And for God's sake, don't wreck their playground of Earth. This is their vacation land. This is a place that they've loved and been. And as I say, it truly seems to me and has for decades that our non-human intelligent being friends, our interdimensional allies, love this earth perhaps more than they love us. And they love us very, very dearly and greatly, but they are not the source. The source energy, or what some call the creator or God, that is the one true unconditional love for humanity that I feel is never jealous, never angry with us, that lives in each one of us. And if we can let that shine through, there will be nothing to save because we'll be in harmony. We're getting there. I believe that we don't need a reset, which we may have had millennia ago here, where humanity is wiped out, very advanced, wiped out and starts over. I don't think we need all of that. I think we have to be patient. I think we have to be patient. And so they do call upon us to also be patient. And they do remind us that everything is built in the quantum field before it manifests here on our earth plane, on this planet. And that what we're thinking about and where we're sending our heart space energy is getting built in the quantum field. So if we're focused on war, destruction, and conquering natural resources, war, destruction, and fights for natural resources are getting created in the quantum field. And so it is the love and the harmony and the compassion in action, where we focus, that will overcome what's being built in the quantum field that is negative. And one more thing in the messages I keep hearing is, humanity is not powerless. We are powerful, but we need to allow ourselves to be power filled. And that is an attunement of the heart and the soul to opening up to the light flowing through us and working through us. And that if we could only realize our true powerfulness, then the fear that's on our planet would subside. And in its place, we'd have that beautiful music and those beautiful colors as part of our everyday landscape, those things that I and many others have experienced in our near-death experience, in our beautiful astral travels and dream state. So yeah, those are the recurring themes, and they give me hope. I am not sad or depressed about where humanity is going. There are individual events that I read about that will hurt my heart, just like anybody else. But I'm going to stay optimistic and work hard on myself, keep working on myself, and because you're never done. I get a kick when somebody says, "Well, I've done all that work on myself. I've done it all." And I'm like, "No, I'm still learning." A teacher once told me, "Suzanne, you'll be the best medium that you can be on the last day you have on Earth." I'm like, okay, that's how I'm living. I'm going to be the best person that I can be on my last day on Earth. Yeah, that's the message.
So you've become a teacher, or at least been a teacher. What are you teaching?
Intuition development. And also, I have a satsang, or our truth community, the Carefree Souls, that we meet monthly, and we have a topic that's upvoted by our members that we cover. And I also have a lot that I'm streaming on my website, and I'm working on a new book. I have a book that's been out for a while called Soul Smart, What the Dead Teach Us About Spirit Communication. And I'm also a guest speaker in hosts programs. People who have like leadership programs and that sort of venue. So I'm really open to getting in front of as many people as possible to help empower them, so they don't need to go and get readings. They can do it themselves.
As an intuition educator, is your biggest challenge just getting people to realize that there are no coincidences and their intuition is real?
Even further than that, the biggest challenge is having people develop trust. Trust in what they're receiving. Trust in, you cannot fail. You will achieve your greater good before you leave this incarnation. As long as each day you're doing basically the best that you can. And it's always the trust is the toughest part. One thing that I hear constantly is, "Suzanne, I have been keeping a journal of things that have happened above the norm, the synchronicities, those freaky deaky coincidences that seem to point the way, my lucid dreams, all of it. And I've noticed that I'll get an insight and I don't follow it and I kick myself later. I give up, or I want to give up, or something to that effect." And I'm like, instead of being disappointed in yourself, which begets more disappointment, because the universe gets your vibe from your heart space of, "I'm giving up, I'm not getting it," and gives you more of that. Instead of that, circle those times that you had an insight and you didn't follow it, and see it as a win, because you will know that next time, if your insight comes to you very calm, very rationally, it's not loaded with a bunch of emotion, it doesn't scare you, it makes sense, that you will follow it. Make a note of that and circle that experience, because it's only when you start stacking up wins. I got an intuition and I followed it. I had an insight and I followed it. It's only when you do that that you can trust. You can't trust something that you can't replicate. And you can't replicate it if you don't try. And you're not trying if you're down on yourself. So it's that's the hardest thing is trust. So I try to make it fun. Exercises that you can do, like intuitive strength building, things that you can incorporate into your day. How about ringing up the groceries, the grocery store? Most of us are doing it ourselves now. So you're just blip, 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 and in your mind, try to see or just know what your total going to be. And people will tell me, I do that every single time. And I got it once, right on the money, literally. I mean, there's so many little things that you can do that work the muscle. But the really big thing that you can do is to know yourself. And knowing yourself is, it's a leap of faith. It's a leap of faith to get to know who you are as a person. What are your gifts? That's number one, is what are you really good at? Even if you don't think it's an important thing, if you're good at it, write it down. And then notice during a week how often you use that ability that you're good at. Who seems to need a good ear, a good listener? Pay attention to that around you. That doesn't mean that you have to be a dumping ground for people. But right now, so many people are so glued to their phones and they're not interacting with each other. And since we've had COVID lockdowns within the last 3 years, we have a loneliness epidemic. That does not support unity consciousness to be in separate little silos. Talk to people, reach out. And in getting to know the other, you get to know yourself. And finally, talk to your guides. Talk to that team that you have. So anybody listening to this that says, I don't even know where to start with that, start with thank you. Hey, team, I know you're there. I know this is going to shock you, but I just want to say thanks to everybody. Thank you. I'm grateful that the source has seen to it to give me you guys as a gift, knowing that Earth is a really rough place and I need all the help I can get. So stay with me. Even if I never really reach out and speak with you again, thank you. It's magical. And see what happens over the next week in your life. Things just start lining up. That phone call you've been wanting to get, the phone rings. It works.
What do you think my guides think of me having all these conversations with interesting people like you?
Oh, I can tell you. There's four standing behind you right now. And it's funny because in the last, I figured you were going to ask something about your guides because I've been seeing little hands going up behind you and I don't see them super clearly, but I see the hands like waving at me. You have a communication guide who heard your idea one day and pushed you to do this and you were saying no. It's just an idea. I should find somebody to do my idea, but it became you. And so I can tell you they're delighted with you. And I think you can feel that.
I guess I should have phrased the question as, is it fun for them to be hanging around hearing all these conversations?
What do you think? What is your heart telling you?
Well, I would say yes, of course.
Yeah. Yes, but not just because they it's interesting. Lots of things are interesting to guides. They have no physical pain. They have no bills to pay. There's no sickness or death, right? and they've got you. It's because you are doing the work of your soul. And nothing makes our guides happier than that. That's self-actualization. Yeah, there are other things, sure, that your soul is going to do, but this is part of it. And that's thrilling to guides.
I wonder if it would be interesting for them, especially because we are talking about them, which
it is exciting. And people's loved ones, oh, they want to be talked about so much. The spirit loved ones, they want the stories told about them. They want the funny stuff shared. They want to see people remembering the happy stuff and the silly stuff and the goofy stuff. And, you know, like even the bad jokes that your dad used to tell that were just like, just so goofy. Nobody really laughed. Tell the joke and say, hey, dad, that one's for you. I mean, they know when we're talking about them. The way that I see it clairvoyantly, and I think they can see it this way too, but I see it clairvoyantly as when somebody talks about their loved one, it's like a little text bubble, like in a cartoon, is popping up beside them. Oh, they're talking about you, and they can just bring their energy right in, interdimensionally, of course.
That just made me think about, you know, when we think of somebody or talk about somebody, and then all of a sudden the next day they call. But yes. I mean, people who are living, right?
Yes. Yeah. And when somebody's really thinking about me, or they're sending a prayer for me, I receive it as pink light that comes into the room. And most of the time, of course, it's my mama, my 81-year-old mama, praying for me. But, you know, when I've asked for prayers, I get inundated with, like, pelted with beautiful white or pink lights. And then when I'm in prayer, which is every day, I have white light appearing all around. So, I mean, to be clairvoyant is to know how real thoughts are. It's pretty cool.
Well, it's good for me that you have another book coming out, because I have a reason to bring you back.
Cool.
When is that going to be published?
I can't give you a date right now. I'm not gonna do a date right now. I'll tell you why. I've gotten sidetracked on a third book. And so I'm going to, now that I'm back from Egypt, I'm going to sit down and talk to my guides. Do I put number two on hold and work on number three? Or does number three wait and I stay with number two? I have not had that meeting yet.
Besides what you've already told us, what was your biggest takeaway from Egypt?
That there are lessons for every soul on earth that come from the veneration of life eternal, that these very early cultures, not just in Egypt, but worldwide, were trying to communicate to us with their hieroglyphics and their symbols. They were trying to tell us how very, very precious life is, and to savor and treasure each moment and know that there is no death. And I got it cognitively before, but now I have it viscerally. I know it. I feel it. I am changed from that journey. And I'm never going back. Never going back to how I was before. Nope. I'm never going back. I'm never looking at a pyramid again and going, oh, gee, that's big. I wonder how old it is. Now I look at a pyramid and go, life. There's only life.
Well, after watching this podcast, people may want to reach out to you and ask you questions. Are you open to that? And if so, how do they contact you?
My website is carefreemedium.com, and there's a contact page right there.
All right. Do you have a YouTube channel or any other social media?
I have all of it. YouTube, IG, TikTok. TikTok is newer. I'm there and I'm ready to engage. Let's do it.
Are they all just under your name, Suzanne J. Wilson?
Carefree Medium on TikTok is Intuition Educator.
Okay.
But Carefree Medium, if you remember that, you will find me. And by subscribing on the website, I have the daily peace meditation that you can use every single day to get grounded and invite the assistance of your spiritual team. And there's an ebook that I wrote with Victor and Wendy Zammit called When Your Partner Doesn't Believe in the Paranormal. Both of those are free gifts on my website.
Cool. Well, before we finish up, can you leave us with one last positive message?
Oh, I'd be so happy to. You are loved more than you can possibly imagine, and you are never alone. The source and your guide, your guardian angel, have never left you, will never leave you, and will always love you. If you can love yourself just a portion of how much they love you, you will never feel lost for very long ever again. And that's my prayer for you.
Suzanne, thank you for your message, and thank you for being my guest.
It's a real pleasure and an honor, and I appreciate the work that you do. Don't quit. Keep doing it.
Thank you. I will. Thanks for watching the Jeff Mara podcast. I really appreciate you. Another way to show support is through YouTube memberships. And if you do, there are loyalty badges and other perks depending on your level of membership. All you need to do is click the join button underneath the video to find out more. Thank you for your support.